Well, another extremely warm welcome. Again, we are so excited to be here, to have brought Mockingbird here, for Mockingbird to have been invited here. And I'm David Zoll. If I haven't met you, I would love to meet you. And I sort of help run Mockingbird. But we have a great, great program planned, and I do want to thank, just up front, the Church of the Advent for being so incredibly gracious to us in every possible way in putting this thing on. We could not have done it without them. So please do be kind and gracious to all the helpers that you see around you, because we certainly could not have orchestrated this thing from Charlottesville. We were sort of warned about trying to do a conference in the fall in Birmingham, in Alabama, under the reign of King Saban, that it might, you know, so I think we had like one possible weekend that we could do it, where Auburn and Alabama were both away. So here we are. So I'm grateful to all of you for being here. So there, we have people that are here from as far away as Washington State, and people that flew in from Phoenix, and then we've got a lot of people that are local. But I would say over the course of the next 24 hours that do try to meet some new folks. This can be a little intimidating to come into a crowd of locals from outside, and those brave souls who are from Birmingham but don't go to the Advent, or from New York or Tennessee, God forbid. Do reach out. We certainly want to be sensitive to the sort of outsider-insider dynamic. But quickly, I'm especially grateful to be here at the Advent because this is where I grew up. I wasn't born here, but from the years from 14 to age 23, a lot happens. And that was where, this was the site of a lot of those things happening for us. If you were here this morning, you might have heard my mother go on in some detail about the specifics. So that recording will be up on the website. Don't listen to it. Who knew my younger brother Simeon was such a failure? Happy birthday, Simeon. But this is the place where I first started to become aware that Christianity was maybe not a drag or a bunch of rules or some construct, that there was some life in it, and that in fact there was some freedom in this religion of my parents. I saw it lived out, and I heard it preached. Because it was my father, I couldn't hear it, but I had to find some surrogates, one of whom we will hear from tonight. But one of the things that was preached from this pulpit, and it continues to be preached from this pulpit, is that there just is not a big distinction between reality and Christian reality. In fact, there's no distinction. There's reality, period. And if Christianity doesn't address it, then who cares? Fortunately, it does. Jack Kerouac, of all people, said this utterance that has stuck with me as we've sort of been doing this Mockingbird thing for now 5 years, believe it or not. And he said that nothing else in the world matters but the kindness of grace, God's gift to suffering mortals. Nothing else in the world matters but the kindness of grace, God's gift to suffering mortals. We are just a collection here of suffering mortals. The Onion, which we quote from liberally, and you'll hear quoted from again tonight, they published a very satirical headline this past week. They say, "Study finds every style of parenting produces disturbed, miserable adults." Santa Rosa, California. A study released by the California Parenting Institute Tuesday shows that every style of parenting inevitably causes children to grow into profoundly unhappy adults. Our research suggests that while overprotective parenting ultimately produces adults unprepared to contend with life's difficulties, highly permissive parenting leads to feelings of bitterness and isolation throughout adulthood, lead researcher Daniel Porter said. And, interestingly, We found that anything between those two extremes is equally damaging, always resulting in an adult who suffers from some debilitating combination of unpreparedness and isolation. Despite great variance in parenting styles across populations globally, the end product is always the same: a profoundly flawed and joyless human being. Then, of course, their closing punchline is, the study did find, however, that adults often achieve temporary happiness when they have children of their own to perpetuate the cycle of human misery. This sense that we're all in the same boat, no matter where you're coming from, if you had a happy childhood or a sad childhood, if you have a good job or a bad job, if you've been successful, if you've been what people might consider unsuccessful, if you are old or young or anywhere in between, that we are all in the same boat, that this message that I've heard and that Mockingbird seeks to repeat over and over in ways that hopefully are not irritating, is that everyone, regardless of who they are dealing with the same exact things. And that the major themes of life are also the major themes of the Bible and of Christianity. That there are themes that occupy God. And what am I talking about? I'm talking about control and peace. I'm talking about criticism and acceptance, hurt and forgiveness, achievement, appeasement, the failure to love and the desire to be loved. I'm talking about the law and the gospel, of course. All of these things which have both external expressions, but more germane to me, are the internal expressions. That I've got this stuff going on in my head, even if I'm not seeing it in the New York Times or Slate.com. Scorekeeping is a reality of all of our lives. The whole point in doing a conference on scorekeeping is we believe that everyone deals with scorekeeping, that we keep score with other people, the people that we love, the ones that we wish we didn't keep score with. We do it compulsively. And we do it with ourselves. You know, Morrissey, the great English singer, has this amazing line. He says, "Beware, I hold more grudges than lonely high court judges." And maybe you live with someone who you feel is holding a grudge over you, that you're in debt to them. You are constantly trying to make up the ledger. But odds are that person is inside you as well. That lonely high court judge that Sigmund Freud referred to as the magistrate on the shoulder, that causes so much pain and neurosis and unrest. Scorekeeping, we contrast it with rest, because scorekeeping takes up an enormous amount of energy. It's exhausting even thinking about, even if we can't stop. So just as we begin this conference, I ask you, sort of, where are you? This is a busy time of year. This is an extremely hectic time. You know, I was talking to someone in our church in Charlottesville, and they said, don't talk to me between Halloween and Valentine's Day. We were trying to figure out when we can schedule something for our young adult group. And they said, just as long as it's not between Halloween and Valentine's Day, there's a chance I might be there. So maybe your life is like that already. Maybe you're about to sort of, this is the deep breath before the plunge. But where are you coming from? Are you feeling rested in your life? Are you feeling exhausted? Are you feeling under the gun in any regard, from a loved one, from yourself, from society, from a boss? My prayer that this conference would be some brief oasis. We would all receive an encouraging word, a comforting word, and then hopefully we'll laugh. George Costanza is going to take care of that for us tonight. So that's my prayer for this conference. Just really quickly, tonight we're going to hear from Paul, then we're going to eat dinner. Tomorrow morning, bright and early, We'll be registering still from 8:30, and the conference gets going in here at 8:30 a.m. We'll have Paul, then we'll have David Browder speak, and then I'll speak. We'll have lunch together, Dreamland Barbecue, praise God. It's an oasis, for sure. And then after lunch, we will hear again from Gil, and we'll have another time with Paul, Q&A. And then tomorrow afternoon, we're really excited that we're having a reception over at the Redmont, which is literally a block that way, for a new resource from my father called the Merciful Impasse, the Sermon on the Mount for those who crashed and burned. They're available for sale. Sounds like a lot of fun. It actually is one of the funniest things ever published under the Christian moniker. My dad was in rare, unhinged form, sort of church history lesson mixed with stand-up comedy mixed with psychotherapy. I wish I could do it. One day, maybe. But we hope you'll be here tomorrow. Even if you can't, we hope you'll drop by for whatever portion you can. And please introduce yourself to me. I'd love to say hello, get to know you all. All right. We're about to hear from Paul Nelson Walker. Some of you know him. He served here in the Church of the Advent for 3 years as the canon for parish life and chaplain of the day school. I don't know what that actually would have entailed. I probably just listened to my dad talk a lot. But he was here. He and his wife, Christy, and their kids were here for 3 years. Paul has three children, Hillary, Glenn, and Rob. He is from Richmond originally, and he moved back to Charlottesville from Birmingham to start a thriving ministry to undergraduates at the University of Virginia. And then, miraculously, was called to be rector of Christ Episcopal Church in 2009. That is Mr. Jefferson's church. Now it's Mr. Walker's church. But that's where he lived. Lives. And you may not know this, but Paul was very instrumental not only in the starting of Mockingbird, he was our founding board of directors. He has long served as my mentor and friend and confidant and just father surrogate. But he was sort of instrumental in rescuing Mockingbird about a year and a half ago when we moved from New York. He said, bring it to Charlottesville, be here, work with me. With the students, we can do this together. And so I am forever in his debt. But I wouldn't have invited him to speak for that reason. He's just too darn good of a speaker and a preacher and a teacher. He's a courageous man. He is the kind of guy that you rarely find, that he actually personifies the message of grace. The message that he preaches. He personifies it in a way that he's even unaware of. It's an extremely powerful thing to be around him, to hear him. He's magnetic. But he's also courageous in his weakness and his love of God and his unflinching, gut-level desire to reach suffering and self-inflicted, self-defeating people with the radical news of God's grace. The ultimate compliment is he reminds me of Coach Eric Taylor. Clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose.